Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Coffee Break. It's Monday, and it's a holiday here in Canada. Yes! So it's like a Saturday to me.
So you're not working today?
I'm not working as in my full-time work, but yeah, getting things done, so.
Oh, well, yeah.
I got the mug. We didn't coordinate today, BP9.
That's okay. That's all right,
I told you to probably only be Saturdays, but...
That's all right. Not a problem.
Because of the holiday.
We'll have to pass the note around before the make sure that we all get the memo, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. Send out those emails.
Everybody get your Phantom of the Opera shirts ready, because Robbie's staying at home today. So hi, BP9. Hi, Peter. Hi, Doug. And Ron Morissette. Doug, you keep changing your name, so I say, like, I can call you by your alias, or I can call you by your name.
Whichever is more comfortable for you.
I guess people have made the connection now that you're Lanceman 63. I guess that people know who you are now.
But yeah.
I just read what's on the screen, so.
That's okay.
But hey, guys. Yeah, so what am I working on? My wife, Becca, is an author, and she is... She's working in the genre of folklore and paranormal, like, lore in Canadian history. So it's really quite interesting because you get, she's taking folklore and turning them into really exciting, kind of interesting short stories. So we're working this weekend. We're working on a new YouTube series. So we're going to be kicking that off pretty soon. I can secretly give you guys access to it ahead of time if you want it, if anybody's into that kind of thing. But we're just building up the YouTube channel, getting everything ready for that. So it'll be like audiobooks, basically, short audiobooks. So kind of cool.
I like, I'm into more science fiction than paranormal stuff. But there's a series of books that I have not found e-texts for yet. It's a whole series of books related to ham radio and realistic use of ham radio in books. So
what I need to do is I need to recommend to Becca. We need to find a ghost story that has to do with ham radio.
Sure,
so we can cross over the genres.
Sure, why not? Whatever works for you. That's fine. Yeah. No problem. Are you saying she's writing these books, or are you saying she's making these YouTubes?
It will be an anthology, but they're short stories detailing these paranormal folklore stories, right, that have been passed down from generation to generation in Canadian history. So, whether they're based on true stories, you don't know.
I'm curious about the process of authoring these books. Has she published these?
No, not yet, because it will be when there's... we're just figuring out when the first volume will come out, so it will be available in paperback, but that will be after, like, the first maybe 12 or 15 of them have been released, and then a volume will come out that you can read in a paperback, for those who prefer that. So, so it's kind of multi. I mean, these days everything is right. It's kind of multi media.
Yes.
I know that's a word in and of itself, but you're looking at, you can read them on a blog, you can read them on Wattpad, like kind of like ebooks. Mm-hmm. You can watch the videos on YouTube. That is really kind of neat because it supplements, because you see pictures that have to do with what's being told, right? So really,
is she self-publishing these books then?
Well, we own a publishing house, so essentially self-publishing. But yeah, we're
you own a publishing?
Yeah,
really.
We're registered with the Canadian Library Archives of Canada. So she's released several books, and she's in libraries, and we've done book visits where we had no idea.
Yeah. No idea. There's more to you than we thought, Robbie.
I know, right?
Publishing empire.
I'm not impressed. An empire. No.
No,
more like just we're capable of making it so that she has a printed copy of her book.
So Do you literally own or control at least the printing houses and stuff, or how does that work?
No, we use third parties. The publishing house itself is simply an entity with the Canadian government. So we're registered with the Library Archives of Canada. We're recognized as a publishing, what's called a publishing house. So we can publish books that become part of the library archive.
Nice.
Our printing, we have a local printer that does all our manuscripts. We have particular printers that we work with to do the paperbacks and everything else. So
I'm curious about the technical aspect of it. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Sure.
So when Becca writes a manuscript, what does she typically use? She'll use Word or something, or what?
LibreOffice Writer.
Okay. The equivalent of Word. The equivalent of Word, right?
Yeah.
Is that what the that's got to be converted somehow from Writer to some other format, right? Before it can be
usually
into the printing house of a library.
Yeah, that's right. Once she's finished writing, then it goes to the editors in a manuscript form, so printed.
Literally once, printed?
On paper? Like printed and bound. Yeah.
Okay.
Printed and bound, usually like a spiral binding. Mm-hmm. So then that goes to the editors. Now, we have done one of her novels. We just did a print where I think we always bind it. I think we've received books that were just loose print. Like the pages were numbered, but we've never done that. We always bind it. So anyways, that's locally done. And then once the editing is done, it's all done in LibreOffice. Then I put together the formatted PDF file, also in LibreOffice. So, and then send it off to the printers. We usually start with a couple of, like a small run just to make sure that the formatting comes out okay. I usually design the book covers as well, so and I use the GIMP for that. So, nice. Yeah, it's kind of neat.
So the printer expects a PDF then in order to
I find that's the easiest way to get it from LibreOffice to the printing house in a format that I feel confident is going to come out well in print, because I can tag the PDF so that because what we had happen once was in the early days when you send if it's a doc or something like that or a PostScript file, if they don't have the right font installed, then it can come out wonky. So with PDF, I can tag the font, include the font files.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's why I do that. It just makes it easier from a.
So I don't use Writer. You know, I don't use proprietary document formats. We've talked ODP? About this before. It's still binary, is it not?
No, it's XML.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. All right. That's worth looking at. But one of the things I was going to say was that one of the tools that I use primarily because it is text only. So that's why I was curious about ODT. It sounds a lot like DocBook, by the way, and DocBook was a real pain in the butt to edit. If you're trying to edit the XML directly, that's just ugly.
Oh yeah. But
I guess you're right. You could take Writer and you could convert it to ODT, couldn't you? And then move forward.
Well, just save as. That's the default format.
Right. Okay. I'll look at that. But
the format is it's XML, but it's a zip compressed. So if you rename the file to zip, then you can unzip it, and you can
Okay.
That was going to be my next comment. Yeah, just take the ODT file, rename it .zip, and then open it with File Roller or whatever, and you'll see all the files. And the reason they do that is you've got the XML, but then if you've embedded any images or fonts or anything like that. Sure. Those are included in the zip file.
Okay. And ODT is an open document standard, correct?
Yeah. Correct, yeah.
I'm surprised. But Microsoft Word doesn't do it, though. Writer will.
Writer will work with any, you can open Microsoft Word fine.
Yes.
And then convert to ODT to make it an open format. But I think Microsoft is starting to get into the bandwagon of realizing that they need to be able to open.
Yeah, so they format. can use it, but you have to tell it to use the new format.
Yeah.
I think that they can open it, but they will ask you to convert it into the much better Word format.
And Microsoft, as funny as that is, if you open an Excel spreadsheet, like an XLS file, in LibreOffice, it will prompt you when you go to save. Are you sure you want to save in this obsolete format?
Yeah, Microsoft format. Yes.
Because we can save it in an open format.
Right. Microsoft are very, very good at importing all kinds of different formats, but exporting is not something they like to do. They would rather you import it into their proprietary format, and then you're locked in at that point.
I remember in my first few years of using Windows, I used the WordPad. It was a scaled down word processor. And when I upgraded it from, I think it was Windows 95 until Windows 98, the new WordPad did not read the old WordPad files.
No, oh, I did not know that.
Burn.
Oh, no.
And when I a couple of years later
when I started using Linux at home, I tried to open the old WordPad files, and no problem.
Yes, yeah, yeah, no surprise there.
I'm going to say that PDF file is safer because I did do my thesis and using PDF files, and nobody could actually read it without they couldn't read it openly with a PDF. Yeah, they could change anything.
No, I didn't get any of that either, Robbie. All I heard was PDF and can't read it.
I'm just going to say, Peter, you bought a new webcam. I want you to go through your audio settings and make sure you've selected the new webcam as your audio source as well, because I can't make you out at all. It sounds like you're talking into a tin can.
I heard a little of what he said, and summary is that PDF is the better choice for exchanging
only if it's the end result.
If you want to ensure that it looks the same everywhere else.
Let me put it this way: it's like, so a PDF to an open document format is the same as, say, JPEG to a XCF file in GIMP, right? So the XCF file contains all my layers, and I can change things and everything. But when I'm ready to send it to somebody, I'm going to save it as a JPEG so that they can open it and it looks exactly how it should. Mm-hmm. But if I send them the XCF file, they may not have the same fonts, or they may have a different version of the program. So things might get a little bit garbled. But as long as I still have that original XCF file, I can always go back and make changes. So PDF is like that, where like it's like fine for sending to somebody, or I use it to send it to the printer, but I would never like always hold on to your original document. Otherwise, your PDF is like a printout. Let's look at it that way. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't go back and change it the same.
I'm
Peter, change your microphone settings.
I can't hear any of what Peter's saying. I can't hear any of it.
You need to figure out your microphone situation, because if we're trying to carry a conversation and we can't make you out, we're doing we want to be polite and be like, okay, let him speak, but we can't understand a word you're saying. Yeah. And it's not your throat. It's the microphone. It's really, really bad quality. So I think that's the next thing.
And
that
also,
you need to work
on. If it is the microphone in the camera that he's using, he is turning his head down.
Maybe.
Yeah. And then his head is covering the.
Yeah. It does. I hear it rustling when you move it. So maybe it is just a poor microphone. But you can do what I did, which is get a headset, which helps. It doesn't sound perfect, but at least if I move around, you can still hear me just as well over here as over here, right?
That's why I use a headset as well, for the same reason.
You see, Peter, a lot of us are wearing headsets. I think that would maybe be a better way to do it.
Yeah,
it would bring the microphone closer to his mouth, too.
Yeah. But I really don't want him to eat the camera. See, because that
you're just overdriving. Now you're just overdriving the crap out of that microphone. So
exactly, and my headphone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Does it come out of the mic? It comes down his throat. So it all.
Oh yes. So can you get? Can you get something? See, BP9 has a pair of headphones where the microphone is actually in the cable. So you see that? That would be nice and close to your neck. So that, and also, that would be the right thing for you.
Or boom microphone like Solbu and me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you see what Solbu can do? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, this one too.
Very cool.
Oh, there you go. Headset.
He has one. Don't set it up now, though. Come on. We'll spend the rest of the coffee break him listening to Peter set up a microphone. Yeah, maybe figure it out for tomorrow.
Robbie,
for tomorrow, Peter. Yeah.
What do you think about Zoom working on Ubuntu?
Like, does it?
Yeah.
Should do.
Yeah, should.
I'm thinking about switching
from Windows to Ubuntu because every time I disconnect my HDMI to plug in my USB headset that I'm wearing right now, and then I plug back into HDMI, I don't get my HDMI back. Well, I get HDMI's the picture, but I don't get sound.
Oh, do you select? Do you select in the audio setting? Like when I'm at the
studio? Yeah, I can go back and select the. I can go back and select the HDMI audio, but it doesn't change anything. It still doesn't work.
No way. Oh.
What I use,
Zoom should work anyway.
Yeah, but I use Pulse Audio for my audio in Linux. I think all the distros do now. And then you can choose where the audio, when you can choose that all audio goes out to your HDMI except for the microphone input.
That's cool.
Yeah, so you can can choose where everything goes. So
you're using Ubuntu?
No.
Windows? Yeah,
but he's saying
I'm not using Ubuntu. I'm using an RPM based distribution.
But he's using Pulse Audio. Pulse Audio is included in Ubuntu.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
So it'll be the same setup, yeah.
Ubuntu might be a better choice.
I also think that in your case, Ubuntu is the audio and video and the routing of audio is better on Ubuntu than in Windows, and it will stay the same. No matter if you unplug and replug, then the outputs will still stay the same.
That's nice. Yeah, that's something Windows does. Is every time you change anything as far as your audio setup, or if I turn on the TV, suddenly, boom, all my audio from the computer is being piped to the HDMI, and it's like, stop! Just let me select.
Yeah, so I think Linux, might do that by default, but you can change where the Zoom audio goes. So and if you change it, then it will stay the same. So I have a Kodi server running on a laptop, and I have the HDMI and so on. But if I unplug the HDMI, the sound reverts back to the built-in speakers. So
great. Give it a try and report back, Lance, man.
Yeah.
But as far as Zoom goes, like I have it working fine on my Linux Mint machine at the office, which I believe is still based on Ubuntu, is it not? So I think I think it should be like that should represent that. Yeah, you should have no trouble at all.
Mint is an Ubuntu descendant. I have one computer here running Ubuntu. I'm sorry, running Mint.
Doing Mint? Okay, we'll try it on that. See if it's any better.
It doesn't have a webcam.
I had no trouble getting Zoom running on my Ubuntu setup, but my webcam was no good. Literally, the light came on the webcam, but there was no image coming through. The first couple of coffee breaks, you saw that. Huh. You heard my voice, but you never did see any image, even though the lights were on.
Right. So what are you running now, Windows?
No, I'm running it on a spare Android phone. So I don't get to do the nice backgrounds and stuff that you guys can play with. I'm just running it on a phone.
If ever I've had that happen where it's just a black screen, I've found what it is that for some reason when I've plugged in my webcam, some program has started using it.
Okay.
And because only one program can use the webcam at a time. So if something grabbed hold of that webcam and then you open Zoom, Zoom won't see anything because the other program has already grabbed control of
it.
Well, the light came on when Zoom started, you know, when I tried to start. And that I was also able to take photos with that camera. I was able to make, I don't know if it was GIMP or something else. I was actually able to make something take an image through that camera. So I know the camera works. I just don't know what quality it is.
Is it possible that that Ubuntu didn't support that camera for video, only for pictures?
It's certainly possible. Yeah, anything's possible. Although I believe it was working at some point. We have to remember too, I'm running an old version of Ubuntu. I'm running 16.04 LTS, so it's time for me to at least upgrade to 18.04 because
have old packages, old libraries.
Yeah, I tried to compile. The PineTime app that I'm using to help me understand how the PineTime works, and it refused to even configure because it said your version of some package is too old. It needs to be at least this version, and it won't even compile. So I'm sure it'll compile on the Raspberry Pi. Reminds me of a video, right?
Yes, actually, it's an old Blackadder joke. Someone didn't do what they were supposed to, and Blackadder said, "The eyes are open, the mouth moves, but Mr. Brain has long since departed." That's what I was thinking about your camera. That lights up and does nothing.
lights are on, but nobody's home. That's the way it works. I remember that.
My webcam on my Linux Mint machine is a C920. So if that, I don't know if that means anything to you, but it worked perfectly. As soon as I plugged it in, it just worked. Also, I tried with the Microsoft LifeCam Studio as well, and it worked flawlessly.
Mine is, I can't even see it now, but mine is an old webcam that I probably just need to go buy another one. I don't have any problem with that.
I have the same, I have the same web camera as Peter has. It's a Logitech P720 or something.
Oh, yeah.
So can anybody tell me if Zoom is in the software center on Ubuntu?
You download it from their website.
There's a Debian package that you can download, and I'm not sure if they are separating between Debian and or Ubuntu, but there is a package that you can download. And if that doesn't work...
I would actually not download the package. I think it has dependencies that, again, my old version of Ubuntu did not satisfy. So what I told them on the website when I did the download is other Linux. Yeah. What you get is a tar file. Then you just untar that tar file, and you have a directory that has everything you need, and it worked perfectly.
You didn't even have to compile it?
No, it was already built.
It
was already built.
Source code.
So. This could be why your webcam wasn't working. It didn't compile in the drivers for the old webcam.
Yeah, I don't think it uses its own drivers. I think it just
fixes the video for Linux.
I think it just relies on the system for the video.
Yeah. Oh, maybe.
Oh, I'm happy to admit my distro is old enough. It's 4 years old now. But I'm too nervous to jump straight to 2004 because I just don't think it's stable enough yet. I don't think it's quite there yet. So
I've never had good luck installing tar files. I can extract them, but once I get them extracted, what do I do with it?
You should have an executable right inside there, and you can just
There is a bunch of executables, but there is one file that you need to run from the terminal, which is what I use anyway. It's called zoom.xh.
Okay.
Zoom.xs?
No, say it out.
Shell. But by contrast, Doug, I, on the other hand, did download the deb file. So I chose Linux Mint from the dropdown and downloaded the file, and I just ran it, which opened DPKG and asked me, you get the button that says install. So I pushed that, and now I just have Start Zoom on my menus. So
if you use the deb package, I also think that they add a repository, so that you might also get an automatic update of if.
Oh yes, yeah. Well, that's yeah. good. Yeah.
I'm sure that would have worked if I'd had a later version yeah, of the distro. Yeah. I think my sure. problem is I've got an old version of the distro, and my next step is going to be to just go ahead and upgrade it. So I found yes. my 2 terabyte drive that came with the machine that had Windows 10 on it.
Was what?
That has Windows 10 on it.
That's the accent over the double.
yeah.
So I'll try installing Ubuntu, and I'll test it on the coffee break on Sunday.
Okay.
Sounds good.
I'm going to go ahead and dual boot that 2 terabyte drive and just go. Mm. Go for that, I think, is what I'm going to
speaking try of
and do.
2 terabyte drives, after this coffee break, I'm going downtown to buy, I think I'm buying 2 terabyte drives. My main system had a hard freeze today, and I used half an hour to... nothing was gone, but I had to manually run an FS check on the home directory. And it used a little time. And during before it ended, I saw a few read errors from the kernel.
Ooh, that's not yeah. good.
Yeah. Mm. So I think, and the machine is 8 years old, so it's time to. So I'm putting in two new drives in that.
And I'm SSDs. SSDs. SSD.
So it's a question of money, and I need hard storage. So
why
I'm going to set it up. I'm going to insert 2 drives, and I'm going to use.
Try to move in now.
Holy guacamole! Yeah,
there he is.
Oh boy.
he just comes in like a bat out of hell,
gangbuster. Yeah, like a gangbuster. Oh yeah. My!
To end, I'm going to configure him as a red one.
Very good. Glad to hear you'll get some redundancy. My final thought for today, BP9 and the rest of you. I finally sort of watched how long it takes to run my backup. Remember I was talking about that 10 terabyte mm-hmm. device? Yes. So I pulled the drive on Saturday morning and switched it, and came back Sunday late morning and it was at 40%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Re-imaging. Yeah. So it probably takes like 2.5 days to re-image that 10 terabyte drive.
Whenever I back up my Synology box, there's about 8 terabytes of available storage, and I'm backing it up to a 10 terabyte hard drive. Uh-huh. It takes a day to back up all of that.
This is something I'm going to say something. I'm going to say something now. It takes me about 24 hours to do, about 36 hours to do 1 terabyte on my machine, Windows machine. I'll swap for a time.
36 hours to do 1 terabyte?
1 terabite? Yeah. No, wow, that's not
doing
right.
Doing it through the phone lines?
That's not right.
I've gone through a server as well, so it might be slow because of the server. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
That's really slow.
As long as it works, then it's just fine.
I don't mind. The time is long, precious to me. I was trying to say the PDF files are safe in terms that people can't change your context of your file because they've been PDF'd, because they're only read-only. With a document file, the people can change it. That's kind
of the point of why we wouldn't leave those as our main file. Yeah, mm-hmm. PDF files can be edited. Like you can buy Nitro PDF or Adobe Acrobat, but it's never the same as working with the original source document. So you want to hold on to those.
Can I also just say now that Peter has a real microphone that he's using? You have never been so clear, and so it has never been easier to understand what you're saying than after you got this microphone. So this is a huge
improvement. Thank you very much. That bloody Windows machine, you know, and keep off of that.
There you go. All this time, we thought it was Peter's neck hole, but it was actually his microphone.
It's called a
we can understand him.
Yeah. It's called a stoma.
All
right. That's a technical name for it.
Well, that's good. Turn on that automatic volume control so that you're not so loud, and that'll probably make things a little better for tomorrow. It's all the time that we have for today, guys. Okay. So we'll see you tomorrow. Good to see you.
See you tomorrow.
See you, Robbie. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.